Now, these 7 points that Isaiah brings out of these three passages, Kaufman goes through each one, and he names this article, "The New Name is the Name Christian." And the first point, this new name was a name given by God Himself. This means that God assigned it, commanded it, and ordered His children to wear it. Where was it given? In the Holy Scriptures, where all the rest of His commandments are recorded. 1 Peter 4:15 and 16, Peter says, "Let none of you suffer as a Christian or a murderer or an evildoer or as a meddler in other men's matters. But if a man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this name." To be perfectly candid about it, this command of God through the Apostle Peter is as plain, definite, and binding upon the followers of Christ as are the other commandments in the same verses, namely, "Thou shalt not kill" and "Thou shalt not steal." Since the name was given and commanded by God Himself, this means that the name Christian was not invented and applied by the enemies of Christianity, as some vainly and erroneously assert. There is no way that men could intelligently assert that Satan would have assigned any name to the followers of Christ that contained a memorial to the unique Son of God, as does the name Christian. As to the question of how men can glorify God in the name Christian, the answer is by wearing it, applying it to themselves, and using it to the exclusion of unauthorized, sectarian, and divisive names. Okay, the second point. The name Christian was given by God within His walls and within His house. This means that it was assigned and worn first within God's kingdom, that being the only house God ever had. And where was this name first given? It was given at Antioch, where Paul and Barnabas first called the disciples Christians. The appearance of the name Christian in Antioch was no casual, accidental, or insignificant occurrence. It came as a result of a number of very impressive developments. God selected a very important person to bring that name and bestow it upon the disciples, namely Paul, the mighty evangelist of the New Testament. The reason for that choice evidently being the truth that the 12 apostles seemed unlikely at that time ever to meet the conditions under which the new name would require to be given. Thus, it was Paul was converted in Acts 9, and in that very chapter, God revealed that the apostle Paul was that chosen vessel unto God to bear God's name before the Gentiles and kings and before the children of Israel. In Acts 9:15. The use in this passage of the very phraseology of this chapter in Isaiah declares the evident truth that the apostle Paul was to be the name bearer, who would be the person through whom the new name would be given to the members of God's kingdom. But as we will see in this last point, 7, the Gentiles had to first be accepted into God's kingdom before the new name would be given. The basis of that general acceptance of Gentiles took place when the house of Cornelius were accepted into God's kingdom, as recorded in Acts 10. Then in Acts 11, the new name appears. Note the remarkable progression. Acts 9, the name bearer was converted and designated. Acts 10, Gentiles were accepted into God's kingdom. And Acts 11, Paul and Barnabas named the disciples Christians first in Antioch. It is simply impossible to believe that all of these events fell into such a pattern accidentally. The third point. The name Christian is a memorial name, appropriately memorialized, the holy head and redeemer of the body of God's kingdom. The mention of the marriage tie several times in Isaiah 62 is appropriate in connection with the sublime truth that all the members of the Messiah's kingdom should indeed wear the name of their bridegroom, the Lord Jesus Christ. Nothing could possibly be more appropriate in this context than the new name Christian. The fourth point. In the Old Testament, the name of the righteous was sons of God, daughters of God, and children of God. The new name was promised to be a name better than that of sons of God and daughters of God. As a result of this promise, we can know that Christian is a better name than sons and daughters of God. The fifth point. The new name was to be an everlasting name that would never be cut off. The name Christian qualifies under this characteristic also because the followers of Christ are today wearing the name Christian, just as Paul attempted to persuade King Agrippa to do during the first century. The sixth point, it was promised to be a new name, and this is the most important qualification. This means that it could not be Hezzabah, as many commentators have concluded, or Beulah, as some Bible concordances affirm, because neither of these was a new name. Hephzibah was the name of the mother of King Manasseh, who was king of Judah for 55 years and mentioned in 2 Kings. And our text also declares that Beulah would be the name of the land, not of the people of God. This same qualification eliminates all thought of disciples being the new name, because that name disciple is a very old name. In the days before Christ, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, and John the Immerser all had their disciples. So it could not be disciples or Hezzabah or Beulah, as many people have falsely claimed. And the last, seventh and last point, the appearance of the declaration that the kings and the Gentiles should see the righteousness of God, as well as the mention of the very same things by Ananias upon the occasion of Paul's baptism, when the name bearer was designated, is a powerful indication that the new name would never be given until Gentiles were generally accepted into God's kingdom. And as we have seen, the name was never given until a great Gentile congregation had been gathered in Antioch. This accounts for the use of the term disciples as the name of Christ's followers throughout the gospel accounts and throughout most of the book of Acts. Significantly, after the book of Acts, no sacred writer ever used the word disciples again as a designation of the Lord's people. The Apostle John, for example, used disciples dozens of times in the Gospel of John, but never used it at all in the four other books that he wrote later.